On today's episode, Josh and I here back to talk with special guest Jim Maisano. We're going to talk Iona basketball, St. John's basketball, the connection to our show, New York, North Carolina. We'll do a little UNC Duke recap, all the tournaments coming up, NCAA tournament, conference tournaments, and just to have a whole lot of fun. After that, you'll hear Josh and I swing at the end and do some college basketball themed trivia. Next.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Two Pointers Podcast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Trevor.
And this week we have our guest, Jim Maisano, on. He's a huge college hoops sports writer and radio host. And so, Jim, welcome to the podcast. We're glad to have you.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation. And obviously, this is a great time of year to talk about college basketball. We have championship week starting this week. And 1 week from today, we're getting brackets for the NCAA tournament. So this is a pretty great time.
Yeah, I honestly can't wait for a week from exactly this time, honestly, because I guess it'll be 6 o'clock.
Yes,
new selection Sunday.
We'll be looking at the TV in exactly 1 week.
That's right. We'll also be looking at it a ton with conference championship week. We'll talk about that in just a moment. We'll open it up really quick. We always ask our guests just to kind of give us whatever they feel about themselves, where people can find you. You also have an opportunity to, you know, plug in what you want and where people can find you at the end as well. But just give us a quick background on yourself, your college basketball watch history, what you've been doing. We've got a little bit of background on you as well. We'll discuss when you get finished.
Sure. Well, it may be interesting to know that I was a lawyer and a politician my whole life that loved college basketball and was always hoping that someday I'd have some free time to do something with my love of college basketball, which kind of happened the last couple of years. And one of the reasons I thought I could get a nice college basketball radio show going is that I live in New Rochelle, New York, where Iona College is situated. And that was Rick Pitino became the coach. So the concentration on basketball in my hometown really jumped with this excitement of Rick Pitino being the coach. Now, we were in the pandemic, which was a difficult time. They weren't even going to allow fans into the games. So think about it. Iona College hires Rick Pitino, Hall of Famer coach, but they can't have the fans go to the games, right? This is like the golden moment of a college. Like, they had a home run, a coach, but no fans. So, but I started the radio show on a local radio station 1 mile from Iona College. And the Rick Pitino thing really did work. People were more into college basketball because Pitino came to Iona. I've been a fan of college basketball my whole life. I mean, believe it or not, when I was like a little kid, I watched Notre Dame upset UCLA in 1974. I mean, how many people could you talk to that saw that game, right? Well, that broke the UCLA's epic winning streak. I don't know if you remember that. That's like one of those greats. They actually did a 30 for 30 on ESPN about that game. So anyway, I was in eighth grade and I told all my friends to watch the 1977 national championship game, which was Marquette against North Carolina. And Marquette was amazing. Their coach was Al McGuire. I actually watched that game in my bed. In my room, I've had the TV on without the sounds. I didn't get in trouble with my parents, but that's how far back I go with college basketball. I'm a fan of multiple teams. As I went to St. Bonaventure for undergrad, they have a great program. I went to Buffalo for law school. They did not have a great program when I was there, but now they're pretty good in that MAC conference. Yeah. I always rooted for Iona. It's my hometown team. And then we own a house in North Carolina, so I root for the Tar Heels. And North Carolina, Wilmington, where the house is located. My house in North Carolina is about 1 mile from Seahawk Nation at University of North Carolina, Wilmington. So I have a lot of teams to root for, including I should put in St. John's. I've always rooted for as a New York team. The good thing about rooting for a lot of teams, somebody's going to win every weekend.
That is true.
Or it's a really bad weekend.
The only other thing I would add is that I have a big part of the radio show, which kind of worked, was I have a big Twitter presence. Both personally, and I set up a Twitter page for College Hoops Chat. So the combination of the radio show and the two Twitter pages has worked. It's been a success. I wish we had thousands of listeners. We're in the hundreds, but, you know, as we all know in the podcast world, sometimes you got to take some baby steps to get the following. So I'm still working on growing the audience. So I appreciate the invitation today.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad you went. One of the questions was the background on why Iona and why St. Bonaventure and why, and obviously the list goes on. I like the cool tie. That was actually the reason I was intrigued was I opened up the website.
I'm wearing Buffalo.
I know, and I was going to, the Buffalo thing was confusing. I was looking at it, and the website's really great. You have a good breakdown of it. And I told Josh, I said, I opened it up, and I'm like, that was what caught my attention immediately was the picture next to Jim Valvano's statue. And, of course, I'm the Wolfpack fan here, unfortunately, for the two of us, Josh and I.
You know why I went to? I went, my son looked at North Carolina State. That picture was while we were on our tour.
I love it. I think a lot of people really like going into Coach's Corner there. It's a really cool I mean, Reynolds is not the same building it was, unfortunately, back then when it was still made out of wood basically entirely. But yeah, we wanted to kind of touch on the radio background because you mentioned the show and the hundreds part of it. And like, I really am intrigued by the connection you've made with the radio to the, and obviously social media growth is a really, really big thing. Twitter is obviously just swarmed with basketball fans. I think it's like, I just feel like Twitter owns a portion of basketball that, and people just love it. Right. But the background, I wanted to see like what your, where your opinion was or how your thoughts are on how the podcasting world has influenced radio and vice versa, since you've been in both now for
a great question. So, you know, it's interesting. You know, I one thing I see about podcasting, I think a lot of people seem to miss the boat on this, and it's not a really a, I'm not meant to be a criticism. It's just what I see. And that is people who do podcasts, they're too long. There's people doing hour, 2 hour podcasts. I mean, everybody's busy in this world. We have jobs, we have families, we have people going to school. I think, so sometimes I see a podcast, and maybe you've done the same and said, it's an hour and a half long, I don't have time to watch it. So I do think people should be careful about timing on podcasts. I do the same thing with everything. You know, my radio show is an hour, it's about 45 minutes without the commercials. That's what we post. And even that's probably about, I think, as far as you can go. But, you know, you got to think about your audience, and your audience is busy and they all have things to do. And so I'm trying to keep things I do shorter. People have time to look at everything I do from beginning to end. Cause I know I jump into podcasts and listen to half. I mean, everyone does that, right? It's hard sometimes to listen to an entire podcast. So that's one interesting commentary in podcast. If you're a podcaster, I think you should think about shortening your podcast because everyone tells me that they're too long. The other thing I was going to say is what a great nexus between Twitter, as you described, Trevor, and having a podcast, because how else can you sell your podcast without Twitter? How else can you get listeners? It's so hard.
It's true.
At least in the basketball world, especially. Basketball is like the one place I mean, we're on NBA, quote, NBA Twitter, right? And you just, it's just thousands and thousands of people
crazy.
Always connecting.
So many podcasts. I mean, look, this sounds, I'm not trying to sound harsh here, but there are some podcasts where the only people to listen are their two best friends. You know, there are people that do podcasts, and you feel bad for these people because, like, I see them posted on Twitter. They don't even get a single like or share, you know, and it's tough. It's competitive. It's really competitive.
It is.
So you have to kind of come up with a product that works. And, you know, my nexus of having it at a radio station first in the town where Iona College is with Iona basketball exploding, right? They're 25-6 now with Patino and have a great chance to go to the tournament. It worked. You know, I get a lot of Iona College listeners on my foundation, which is kind of nice, right? I don't have I don't have to go nationally for a foundation. I have Iona College. And because I've been networked with St. John's, because it's nearby here, right across the water in Queens, I've got a lot of St. John's fans that listen. And I picked up, because of my college background, St. Bonaventure, and Buffalo. So, and then because I talk about the Carolinas, I get that too. By the way, my son goes to the University of South Carolina. So I follow them too.
Let's make this even more confusing for our listeners. I love it. Confusing. I love
so
it.
My only point is you pick up people along the way. I don't think we had any kind of brilliant plan here, but by putting all those different schools up, it picked more listeners up for us.
Yeah. No, I think the podcasting space is definitely, it's so unique in its own way. And people just kind of like, you have to be unique at the end of the day. Something has to stand out from the next guy or not. And it's competitive, but then there's also, we've met a lot of great people in this space and they've been able to help us and vice versa. I think the New York thing is really interesting because it's one of my favorite places in the world, anywhere in that area near the city, because you can be, It's like the guys like John Jastrzemski, where it's like, you know, they have these huge shows, and they, because they're on these huge networks, but like, he used to be a 3 a.m.
right,
you know, radio guy in New York, and I loved like what he did. I mean, you could pull it up from anywhere on iHeartRadio now, and it kind of takes away the fun of being there. And if you're a night shift guy and you're listening to the radio in New York City because you work a night shift job, like, that was the guy that told you about the Mets. That was the guy that told you about the Islanders. That was the guy that told you about the Jets. Yeah, I bet it's great. I love the guy. He does a huge podcast now on one of the largest platforms in the Ringer. So it's just an example of just like so many cool little like unique opportunities because you're in a city that people can be at any time of day and be able to pull that. Right. And that's why the podcast thing, Josh always talks to me about the on-demand part of it. And I never put that together.
No, he's
It's always an interesting angle.
It really matters. You know what's interesting about that, though? New York's interesting for podcasting and college sports because you have so much pro sports. You know, you have two basketball teams. You have two baseball teams. You have two football teams plus Buffalo upstate. I mean, there's a lot of competition for college sports. And if you think about it, right, college sports never really developed that great in the New York metropolitan area because pro sports is king. But like, I'll give you an example. In the 1980s, I don't know how old you guys are, but St. John's was great in the 80s. Chris Mullen, Mark Jackson, who you see doing the NBA games, Bill Wennington, who played for the Chicago Bulls. They went to the Final Four. College basketball was huge in the New York metropolitan area when St. John's was good. You know, St. John's is no longer a national program, and that's really hurt college sports in the New York metropolitan area.
We literally talked about that last week, Josh. That was really funny how you brought that up because we were talking about, like, we made the connection where we were like, holy cow, they haven't been good in our lifetime. Yeah. And to be clear, we are in our mid-20s. Gap for us when it comes to college basketball. We grew up in Tobacco Road, so obviously that's why I made that
pretty
cool
awesome
connection.
You grew up in an awesome place too, by the way.
I can't speak for Josh, but like when I'm out of town and I like forget that I'm from the area, and when I say from, like we're literally in that triangle.
Right.
And
I'm in Chapel Hill.
I go out of town and people are like, you're from like Tobacco, and it could be anywhere, not just New York, but people are like, you guys are from Tobacco Road. Like that's so, and I never realized I took it for granted until stuff like Leanna Saturday, we'll get to in a moment with, you know, Coach K, but until stuff like that kind of comes to fruition nationally, you're like, I never realized it was that big of a deal until I'm like, okay, this is actually a really big deal.
It's a huge deal.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, like I love Tobacco Road basketball. I just love it. And I loved it long before I had a house in Wilmington, by the way. I mean, I've always loved it since I was young. I mean, I remember the 80s teams for North Carolina were just so incredible. Michael Jordan and James Worthy. It was unbelievable, you know. Just tremendous. Sam Perkins. I mean, just tremendous basketball teams. And they played so great with Dean Smith as the coach.
Absolutely.
And let's not forget about North Carolina State that won the national championship with Jimmy Valvano. And that was a terrific basketball team.
New York guy as well.
So by the way, I went to Iona Prep for high school. So Iona Prep, Iona College, two Catholic schools kind of related to each other, although they're not the same exact school, but they're connected. But that was when Valvano was there at Iona.
Wow.
So Iona was really good. I mean, they won over 30 games one year with Valvano. They had a tremendous team.
Wow.
But before he went to North, that's why he went to North Carolina State, because he did a tremendous job. Matter of fact, they lost by Georgetown in the round of 32 by about 3 points. Had they beaten Georgetown, they would have went to the Sweet 16. And that team was good enough to go another game or two, that Iona team, that actually put Jimmy Valvano on the national scene, that had him land at North Carolina State. But that was a great Iona team. That's one of the greatest teams ever. We'll see about this year. Pitino's team might rival that. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I think Pitino's team, when a week from now, when we're all talking about our brackets and who's going to run, I kind of just foresee Iona being that popular pick that people make to make
they
several
have a tough
upsets.
Road. Can we jump into a conference tournament? Is that okay? Can we jump into a conference tournament?
Go for
here?
It. Yeah.
Iona's got a tough road. That conference, the MAC conference, MAAC, they have been beating each other up all season. If you look at the standings, there's a bunch of teams in the middle. We're all about the same record. You have Iona at the top, but you've got teams like St. Peter's, who's excellent. You have Monmouth, who's a very good team. You have Siena that got better and better and better over the course of the year. You have a team like Marist and all of a sudden that got hot. I think Iona is the best team on paper, but I can't tell you they're going to win the tournament this week. We all know You go out one game,
and that's true.
Yeah, you get in a slump early in the game, and the other team's hitting threes, and you get down by 10. We all know anything could happen in a conference tournament. So Iona is no sure thing. As much as I am a fan, I've seen every Iona game this year. I've covered every Iona game, but I've seen all the other teams in the MAC. It's just one of those northeastern kind of rugged conferences where there are a lot of tough games. And Iona's got a tough road this week. I'll tell you that right now.
There's a lot of tough guys that are up there as well. I've been trying to keep an eye on Monmouth and my own point because of the former Tar Heel from last year, sure. Walker Miller.
Right, Walker Miller.
Starting for Monmouth and having an incredible season.
Yeah, and they also have a Seton Hall transfer. They have a Seton Hall transfer also. So they have two power conference transfers, Monmouth. And they had a pretty good team coming back to begin with. So, and King Rice is the coach who played for North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was Monmouth is a very good team.
Walker ending up in Monmouth. And
yeah.
I think they've got
So everybody's got Iona as a 12th seed, which is kind of exciting right now in every bracket I've seen. Yeah. But they've got to get through a rough tournament this week, like every other team in the nation.
Oh, yeah. There's no sure thing. I think Murray State was able to lock up their NCAA tournament bid, but even they kind of had a tough game against Morehead State to get to it.
They were good. I watched the game. Yeah. I watched the game last night. Morehead State was tough. They hung in there. They never quit.
We're going to tie it into, you mentioned the conference tournament thing. We'll tie in this really quick because you mentioned the Iona thing and you went back and you were touching on some of these players from Carolina's 80s teams. We would absolutely, our fans and listeners, every time we do some like player specific stuff, you've seen the people love it. Who's the best player you ever saw in person? And the caveat is it could literally have been, and I'll give you an example. Josh's dad just happened, he was a coach in North Carolina in the 80s, and he just happened to see Jordan and Buzz Peterson play in a pickup and scrimmage in some form. So
it was counts. McDonald's High School.
That's it. It was that little. Yeah, that's right. Sorry. And that counts. Anything like that. So who's the best player you've ever seen? Obviously, you've been in a great rich area for college basketball with the St. John's thing.
I have to be in the gym watching. In the gym watching.
I think that's the caveat. Yeah.
Wow. That's a great question. So let me give you an 1A part. I mean, let me think of 1B. 1A is easy. That's why I could just do it. Ready for this? And this is pretty cool. When I was a freshman in high school, I was at school and I walked into the gym because my friend said this freshman team was playing. I own a prep freshman team was playing a school called Power Memorial. I don't know if that means anything to you guys. Guess who went to that school? Lou Alcindor, later Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Wow.
Okay. So
why you asked this question.
But that, I'm not that old. Wait a second. I'm not that old. Lou Alcindor was not in that game.
Okay.
So I walked in the gym, and you guys know how it is. If you ever saw a high school basketball game with a future pro in it?
Oh, yeah.
The kid is so much better than everybody in the court. It's like a man playing with boys. You know what 100%. I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
You know who that person was? Chris Mullen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, former St. John star. Dream team player, Golden State Warriors. He was my age, freshman, on the court. And he, by the way, you know, he had like 32 points, 18 rebounds, six steals, four assists. I mean, like, he was so dominant. Everybody in that gym was going, "Who? You see that kid? You see that kid? Oh, my God, that kid was amazing." That's 1A. 1B, wow. I couldn't even – the best person I ever saw live. I'll tell you one play I'm going to put there. I'm doing only college, not pros. Pearl Washington on Syracuse.
Wow.
You remember that? You know that? Ever heard of that guy?
That's
he was
one.
Such a phenomenal basketball player. He never really made it in the NBA. He did get drafted, but in college,
he was a high school
Syracuse. Awesome. Pearl Washington, dominant player.
Yeah, he was a high school legend.
Chris Mullin, Pearl Washington. Not too bad.
Yeah, let's say the Lou Alcindor thing was like you ask the questions like that and you never know the answer. That's why I love that question.
Right.
That's such a good. I'm so glad that you went there because there's like so many different ways you can answer that. But I'm glad you at least threw in a story that wasn't just a college game. That's what I was hoping for.
Yeah,
that was completely succeeded.
Yeah, that school. Sadly, that school didn't make it. Over the years, they had difficult budgets, and the school doesn't exist anymore. Power Memorial, but they were. They were from probably the 60s, 70s, and 80s, like one of the dominant basketball programs in America, not just New York.
Well, let's touch on a little bit of Tobacco Road before we hit on. We'll end with a couple of any more storylines from conference tournaments that we might not have hit on, but we'll touch on the Tobacco Road tie because, again, I brought that up
earlier. Please do, because I'm still so excited about last night. I want to talk to somebody about it.
We were going to start with State. Really quickly, give me 30 seconds on what can turn State around because I need to hear it. I need something to get me through the rest
years.
Of this year.
Two
a
words.
Few years, few months, whatever.
Two words. Transfer portal.
Oh, okay.
Keats is a great coach. I'm a Keats fan. Okay. I think he's a very good coach. He did well when he got there. You know, they had the major injury this year, yes. Which held the team back. But I think that Kevin Keats is a bright, impressive person that can sell players on going to North Carolina State, playing in the ACC, playing on Tobacco Road. And by the way, playing. Like, we've got a team where you can come in and play.
That's right.
So I think Keats can turn it around with a good transfer portal. So I would put all my stock right now on transfer portal.
All right.
And I think he's going to have a big opportunity with trying to scout that NCAA tournament. Look at who pops out as sure. the major stars. Absolutely. I mean, you look at last year, those guys from Oral Roberts that ended up, I think one of them at Oklahoma. Or no, that was a guy from Eastern Washington went to Oklahoma. And one went to a guy from Oral Roberts went to Kansas. And right. they're having big impacts.
Even my son goes to South Carolina. James Reese was with North Texas last year. They had a big upset. And he was from Columbia, South Carolina. So that got him on the map. So he was able to transfer home to play where he always wanted to play in the first place.
Yeah. It's because you have all these guys that are just as talented to be playing in one of the bigger Power Five conferences, but they just for one reason or another get overlooked and then
they get better. Right, there's some guys that maybe – their senior year of high school, they were, you know, all these guys are very good to great, but maybe they were just very good in their senior year. But freshman, sophomore year of college, they got a lot better through player development.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Opportunity for better staff around you.
Yes.
UNC Duke, I guess, recap or discussion or thoughts, wherever you, whatever stirring that might not have been on Twitter last night.
So I'll tell you the first thing that I thought in the days before and then the actually watching the game. All week long, in my mind, as a Tar Heel fan, I thought they were going to lose to Duke. I just thought, how could those Duke players not go out there and win that one for Coach K? I thought that all week. So I wasn't excited going into that game, right? I was going to watch it. I sat here. I was calm. I wasn't jumping around. I wasn't mad. I said, let me just sit down and watch the darn game, right? And when the game developed and I was watching it, only like into the first 5 minutes, I said, wow, how wrong were you? The pressure's not on North Carolina.
No.
Pressure's not on North Carolina at all. They're just going in there playing with house money. The whole world thinks they're going to lose. All the pressure was on those Duke kids. They made such a celebration of this last game. They ended up putting so much pressure on their players with every great player in history to school sitting around them while they're on the court that they buckled under the pressure. Unfortunately for the young, and they are a young team, Duke, those players at that moment were not able to step up and win that game. The bright lights of that game were too bright for Duke last night. And then, by the way, North Carolina went out and played great. So you had two things happen at once. The pressure got to Duke, and North Carolina went out and played great. And that combination turned to a pretty solid victory for the Tar Heels. I had so much fun watching that game. I sat down calmly for the whole game. Last 5 minutes, I was jumping up and down. When I said, oh, this is really going to happen. They're going to win.
So that's what I was just about to say, because I kind of went through that same process. So I'm an alum from UNC, still living in Chapel Hill. And I kind of just – I sat down. I was my usual kind of amped up into it, but I just wasn't like jumping up and down. I was literally – and I can't remember the last time I did this watching any game, just jumping up and down for the entire final 5 minutes of the game. When it became obvious we were going to win, I couldn't stay seated at all. And I was really losing my mind at it. Some cool things, like I wanted to note from my thoughts in the game that there was a good coaching adjustment at halftime. And this is kind of a funny coaching adjustment to it. At halftime, I think UNC was +6 with Armando Bacon on court, -11 with him off. So Coach Davis made an adjustment. He didn't take him out after that.
Genius.
Not take Baycott out. He didn't take anyone out. He made no substitutions in the second half. Played the five starters for the entire 20 minutes.
What a great night for UB Davis. You know, there were some doubts there in the course of the year from the fan base, you know, but he went out and won this gigantic game in front of the whole country in a game that really mattered to lock up the at-large bid for North Carolina. UB did that. UB got it done in a really tense, tough situation. You know, look, we all know UB Brooks brought a lot of life experience in the sport of basketball, whether announcer, coach, player, he's done it all. And I have a feeling that some of that great experience was relied on by the team last night. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they got a lot of great guidance from UB and the staff.
So I'm glad you two had your fun here talking about the
Well, let me ask you a question, Trevor.
Well, the fun's not over. I got many more.
Trevor, I have a question for you. What did the North Carolina State fan base do last night? Did they root for Duke or North Carolina?
So funny you asked that, because that was actually what I was going to tell you. I was going to give you guys a 30-second, like, devil's advocate, what I was doing the entire time. I was watching it at a small bar in a small town here in North Carolina, and I enjoyed it because it was very quiet, very quaint. You were able to kind of focus on the game. I was watching it in zero interest other than the fact that I wanted to see how the likes of A.J. Griffin, Mark Williams, Armando Bacot, who, by the way, my stock on him, just I'm all in. I'm buying it now. I'm like,
He's
I wasn't
a great
in.
College basketball player.
ACC player of the year now.
I love the draft a lot more than most, and I've been doing draft analysis stuff for about 5 years, and I genuinely, to tell you both, and I didn't tell Josh this yet, but I watched it entirely. Every 2 to 3 minutes, I would watch another player and see how they handled a big situation, and I was watching it for draft analysis only. That was the only reason I was watching it. I had a great time. It was really, really cool to be able to just pluck and see how, even though some of the Duke guys didn't get it done, like there was some moments where I was like, okay, I've watched enough Duke games, but like this is the biggest game they're going to play as freshmen that are probably going to get drafted. Likes of like Mark Williams, obviously, is a good example. So that's what I was doing as a State fan. I can't speak for the rest of Raleigh, but
what do you
I was
think,
at least...
though? Do you think the majority of State fans rooted for Tar Heels or Blue Devils?
Gun to my head, I don't really know how to answer that question, but I'm probably going to say Duke only because we probably
think they wanted a tie.
I think if there was a scenario where they both lose, I'm sure everyone was thrilled by that, but I think only because of the sheer legacy and appreciation, and obviously I'll look at it from that angle as somebody who loves college basketball, who grew up here. Like, I appreciate what Coach K did. I mean, heck, my dad was 8 years old when he started at Duke. I mean, you got to, like, really put that in perspective and go, it's a big deal. I don't care who you are. Sure. I don't care if you're from New York, if you're from California, you're from – it doesn't matter. He's a big deal. Like him or love him or hate him. It's a matterful thing, and that's where I was the entire time.
Well, let's just put it this way. He may be the greatest coach in history of the sport, but at the end of the day, our Tar Heels kicked a little butt last night, didn't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. And it was a great time for everyone, whether you loved, I mean, obviously Duke fans were thrilled, but it was a great time. I can't say it wasn't. What does the future of Duke basketball look like now, though? That's my question, because the John Shire thing was really interesting.
I've got more still before we get there.
Oh, yeah, okay, go ahead. Finish the Carolina stuff. Go ahead.
Cut off from – and, I mean, some of this will deal into what the future of Duke basketball is, but
– okay, I like it.
So the whole game was kind of cathartic to me for two or three reasons. One, the first game of the season was really tough. It was a spot where our team didn't come out playing that great. We just kind of got – punched in the mouth kind of in the first game, and
weren't able to pull back. Let's not even mention that game again. That was really hard to watch.
And it was also, there was a very negative media presence around North Carolina after that game, saying that they didn't do anything to honor Coach K, which they did. They brought him out.
They beat him on his home floor. Of course they did. They beat him on his
home
floor. That's
an
honor.
Pregame and had a photo with Coach Williams, Coach Davis, and Coach Shire. That wasn't reported. The narrative was that UNC didn't honor K and then got.
Oh, please. What were we supposed to do? What was North Carolina supposed to do? Have this gigantic celebration court for Coach K?
I agree with you guys on that.
We didn't even do that for Dean Smith and Roy Williams.
Exactly.
To be fair, that's true.
Well, they didn't tell anybody they were retiring.
Yeah. My only point is, I think that media concentration was absurd. Yeah.
It was.
You know what? North Carolina was every bit classy with Coach K through his retirement. They didn't do anything that anybody could say anything in a negative way. They were, you know, the only thing that negative, though, was some of the fans were jerks that were yelling out some negative Coach K stuff in that first game.
Oh, yeah.
I would say that. That was the only time I thought it didn't make the university look very good.
No, there were definitely some.
Sometimes less is more. In this case, I think that's okay because you're ultimately a rival. You're ultimately somebody who respects it if you actually do or care.
Yeah, I think it, what I've heard is a criticism from a lot of people. It seemed very much like, and I mean, it was an assumption from everybody kind of watching college basketball that Duke was going to win last night. And it led to probably one of the most awkward post-game ceremonies aired live on ESPN that I've ever seen, as they went through the retirement speech.
Sure.
But one of my favorite things that kind of cast my mind back to, I was watching the game and they kept, ESPN would cast, like, when Duke would make a big basket, they would put the camera out to one of the former players or something to get a reaction shot. And they kept going back to J.J. Redick over and over again. And all it reminded me of was my second favorite Carolina Duke moment from my lifetime in 2006. And J.J. Redick's senior night at Cameron Indoor Stadium, when things went about the same way, when Tyler Hansbrough as a freshman came in.
Sure, sure.
And knocked off Redick and Sheldon Williams and what was a number one ranked Duke team, not a number four ranked. But.
I don't know, Trevor and Josh. I would just close my thoughts on this by saying the following. Roy Williams is one of the greatest coaches also in history of the sport and didn't have to have this whole year crusade. Everybody tell me how great I am, like one Coach K. He said, you know what, folks? I had a great career. Thank you. I'm moving on. Seemed like a pretty classy way to handle it. Thank you, Coach Williams.
Yeah, he actually, a video surfaced, he basically walked off. I don't know exactly the scenario, but I think it might have been a similar, like, final home game, and you could see him, and they panned off the camera. And I think it was taken by a reporter, and he kissed the I think it was the heel at the time, and he bent down and kissed the heel at midcourt, and he walked off, and no one knew that that was his final game. I did not know that happened.
Right. I was standing on the court when that happened.
I'm a big Roy Williams fan.
Yeah, I was standing on the court when that happened, and yeah, he everyone was a little confused at the time, but
yes,
it happened on April 4th.
Because I don't think, as far as you know, like the decision, he hadn't made a decision to retire at that time. It just might have been a coincidence. But
all right, to be conscious of time, we are going to tie the last two together really quickly here. Any other conference tournament or any other teams, players that are worth mentioning that you've kind of, I mean, you entirely cover college basketball here, and you obviously are very knowledgeable of it. Anything else storyline wise? And if not, or if so, tie it to any NCAA tournament sleepers and a prediction of some kind.
Well, I certainly think, and I follow this conference closely, that the Big East is going to be a war. Mm-hmm. I mean, Villanova, Providence, UConn are all about the same. They're all really good. All their games have been close. I think that's going to be some, if they all make it to the semifinal at Madison Square Garden Friday night, that's going to be a heck of a semifinal. And then you're going to get a Seton Hall or a Marquette or a team like that as your fourth team. I think the Big East semifinals is going to be tremendous because the teams are so close.
I need a big run from Xavier as someone who picked him as a preseason contender.
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked sleeper. What happened to Xavier at the end of this season. They really fell apart, and I thought they had the players to be the second best team in the Big East behind Villanova, and Providence turned out to be that team.
As did I. No one saw the Providence thing, I feel like. But it's the Xavier thing. It was the guard play. It was just the experience. It was all these things. And I'm like, you look at a preseason favorite and you go, or a preseason sleeper, and you go, that's perfect. They have seven guards that can play at any moment in a big spot. And I was like, this is perfect.
I would just add one other thing. I think the Big Ten tournament, conference tournament, who's going to win that? I mean, I think the three of us could sit in a bar and come up with five different winners of that one. I mean, I have no idea who's going to win the Big Ten championship.
It's one of the.
I just want to see Wisconsin and Michigan play again.
That's right.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Well, there's a storyline there, and that is you have two teams that about a month ago looked like they'd be NCAA tournament teams, Indiana and Michigan, and now they're on the bubble, and they both got to win some games in the Big Ten to make it to the NCAA tournament. So there's a storyline kind of work together what you asked.
Yeah, that was my big thing with the Big Ten coming into this week was, like, there are some people, and Indiana and Michigan are prime examples, there are some people that need, it's kind of like the ACC tournament of the old, where it's like you have to win a couple, like right when they made the ACC tournament, like where you didn't have to win it to be a bid. Like, you saw these bloodbath games where it was like you knew that the quarterfinal mattered because you were on the bubble. You, like, had to force yourself to win those games. Mm-hmm. So I think the Big Ten is going to be really important for that this year.
So you want Cinderella's?
Yeah, I do. One couple.
We've been talking about it on the radio show, and I've been asking everybody.
I just don't want you to spoil anything. Don't spoil anything if you have anything bracket-wise coming up on your show.
I mean, we've already talked about it. It's already out there.
All right. That's fair.
In the social media world. Wyoming.
Oh, okay. They're
an inside-outside game. Take a close look at Wyoming. They have a really good guard and a really good forward. They have an excellent season, and I would Wyoming could easily beat someone. Three people have said on the show the following team that I have to admit I have not. I've seen Wyoming play, and they're very good. I haven't seen this team play. South Dakota State. This is coming from big time, full time college basketball analysts. South Dakota State, so I'd put them down as a team. And the only other team, I guess, how much are they a Cinderella at this point? Because they were on national TV yesterday. But Murray State, I think, is going to win a couple of games, at least one game. I think they'll win their first game, Murray State. Nobody's going to want to play Murray State. They're a very fast, exciting, well-coached team that I only lost two games all year.
All right, Josh.
There's three for you.
Look, I like it because the Wyoming piece, I think, is definitely important. If I was really, you know, wasn't having a restful night one night, I would watch a lot of that Mountain or that Mountain West. Sorry, I think is I get those conferences all mixed up when they're in that bubble. I would stay up late a couple of times. I'd catch them, and they just beat people convincingly. They just like white people now, and
they're really good.
They really are.
They're an excellent team, and they're well put together. It's a real team. And one other team we should throw out there, I guess I get one more in. And that is, I don't call this a Cinderella. This is not a Cinderella, but there's a team out there that everybody better wake up on because they were 500 a month ago and now they're on fire. And that is the Memphis Tigers who blew Houston Cougars out of the gym.
Yeah.
I mean, they played, you see the game? They played tremendous. I mean, they look like a Sweet 16, Elite 8 team today, at least today against Houston. That's a team that's ascending. Memphis Tigers are ascending right now.
I think they're going to have to win like a handful of games in their turn. That's the part. Like they're going to have to win a handful of convincing games.
I thought that Trevor until they beat Houston today, though.
Yeah, that's the part. I did see that. And Houston, obviously, the injuries aside, like Houston's a good team. Like Houston's still going to be tough. They're not going to be that Final Four team that we thought they might have been. I just think too many injuries happened at too many of the wrong times.
Try to catch the highlights of that game. You know, now you can go on YouTube. I don't know if you guys do this, but you put highlights. You can find these 10-minute highlight reels of college basketball games. Take a look at that game. Memphis was a terrific performance today. Terrific. They were so good.
Yeah, I think San Diego State's a funny one, Josh, because I think it's going to be the Oral Roberts of last year where we just we stare at them for 3 days, and then we record our tournament preview, and we go, there's going to be one team that we're going to be like, you idiots.
Yeah.
And it's going to be probably San Diego State or something of that caliber. And I'm just
going to play very well in the month of February. San Diego State's played very well in the month of February.
Yep.
They're getting they're a team also. Or
South Dakota State. I met South Dakota State.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Well, San Diego State's good too, by the way.
I had them actually.
So I was going at last year we did a bracket preview and Trevor picked San Diego State to go to the Elite Eight and they lost their first round game. So it was
that's right. I think I had them not in the first round too. So don't worry, Trevor, I was with you on that one.
Win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
All right. If you had to make bracket aside, you had to make a pick right now, who's winning the national title in a month?
Gonzaga.
Ah, love it. See, that's where I feel like I'm going to end up, and I'm okay with that. I feel better about it.
Easy.
And one team has two players of that level of talent and that kind of dominant performance this year, down low. You know, the other team has a lot of good guards, and I understand the NCAA tournament is a guard tournament, nobody has two stars, a center and a forward in America.
Yep. It reminds me of Gonzaga's team in 2017, but better, because they have they're kind of all locked up from 2017. It was Shemek Karnowski and Zach Collins.
Sure.
That were the dominant kind of towers there. And now it's Timmy and Holmgren.
And they have Nebhardt, the guard too, by the way. They have the guards. Let's not forget that they have a great guard.
I think what is going to help me talk myself like into them as just like, I'm going to just have to stick it out with them is the fact that their conference is the best they've been in the last probably 5 to 10 years.
That's a great point. Playing tough games.
I mean, their conference might have four people in it, and it sounds ridiculous. Like San Francisco's a bubble team, but then St. Mary's and BYU, or BYU's the bubble there. I think San Francisco is probably the one that gets in anyway.
Currently,
three are in for sure. BYU's on the bubble.
That's insane to me. Like, I still can't figure that out.
But I like this Gonzaga team. They play beautiful kind of basketball. You know, the way they space. I mean, it's like you could see how well they're coached when you watch them play.
For sure.
All right, Josh, anything else that I'm missing or that we've missed before we give what we call our shameless plug? We give everybody 30 seconds before they go out just to make sure people know where to find you. But, Josh, anything I'm missing before we could do that?
No, I'm just I'm ready for this ACC tournament.
That documentary.
Last night was Coach K's last game in Cameron Indoor against UNC, but it might not be his last game against UNC.
That's right.
Keep your eyes on Saturday night at the Barclays Center in New York, because that very well may be one more time. But
Josh, you know who I'm interested in to see how they do, because they've had a pretty good season, but I'm wondering how they do in the tournament, is Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a, you know, they've been a pretty solid team. I like Mike Bray. I think he's a good coach and a good guy. I was hoping he'd have a good season this year because he was a little on the hot seat, and he did. And I'm curious how they're going to play in the ACC tournament.
It was interesting because they finished second place in the standings in the ACC this year, but they were kind of considered a bit one of those weaker sides of a team, like a bit weaker than a Miami team who had some tough losses that was a bit lower.
They're old. The whole starting lineup is 21 and 22. That helped them a lot.
Yeah, that's a key. That's one of my big things that I look at for who's going to make a run. I look for how many years they've been playing. Because those are the guys that are going to take teams' places at the end of the day.
Well, I'm looking forward to the ACC tournament too, and I hope that a really great team ends up winning. Obviously, North Carolina won, if not another team. The one team I would not like to see win is Duke, but we don't need to get into that right now.
Yeah, look, this documentary, if people haven't seen it, they need to. It's the ESPN documentary, the ACC tournament, and it's just, it got me so fired, refired back up in a year where, like, it doesn't feel like the ACC is that good, and it's just, I'm so, like, just overly zealously excited about it. I'm disappointed it's not in Greensboro Coliseum, because that would be really fun, but it's...
You ready for Tuesday for State's game? I can make the run.
It's Tuesday, man. A Tuesday team, it hurts my heart.
Trevor, I just want you to know, I am a Tar Heel fan who does not dislike... the Wolfpack.
Well, we
I like the Wolfpack because they let my son in. My son applied and got in, and he was thinking of going there, though he picked South Carolina. It was a close one. But we love North Carolina State, too, just so you know.
I always tell people, I tell my friends, this will be the last thing I say. I tell my friends, or I tell people I know who I meet who might not be college basketball fans, I go, really, and this ACC tournament documentary is why I'm bringing this up in the grand scheme of things. I just never like put two and two together until this documentary where I was like, this just bloodbath of coaches, like the tournament had period, but like State had Norm Sloan. Like I never like, you know, Press Maravich, you know, Norm Sloan, the guy who invented the tournament. Like, or I'm sorry, Everett Case. I went a little bit back, but like, and then Jim Balvano, I'm like, just, it's this unbelievable. You look at this like, Hall of Fame resume. And I'm like, I have to remind myself of that. Like Coach's Corner. I was walking through it the other day and I was like, one, two, three, and then you don't even count Yao in that. I'm like, it's crazy.
Hey, so, Josh, anyway. I have a question for you.
Go for it.
Tar Heels, real. See, I'm a only for like 2-3 decades Tar Heel fan. You're a real Tar Heel fan. You went to the school. You live down there. I'm just one of these New York Tar Heel fans. You guys dislike Duke more than North Carolina State, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not basketball.
It's not even close.
I'd say the rivalry has shifted in football a bit.
Absolutely.
That, I mean, because NC State's much more competitive than Duke as a football program. Even if people won't say it, they're the biggest rival in a lot of other sports, but basketball.
So if North Carolina State was playing in the ACC final against Duke, Tar Heel fans would be for North Carolina State?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, 100%.
I like that.
All right, 100%. So, all the way.
So I'm okay liking both Tar Heels.
There's no pack,
all right? I like state basketball.
All right,
because I've always had the utmost respect for Jim Valvano. I like state basketball.
Okay,
now, the rest of state's teams, I'm not.
You made me feel better. Thank you, guys.
Hey, look.
I'm not messing up as
sports.
Even the cool.
State's better than Duke. Everybody's on state side over Duke.
You got some fun full circle moments, too, with like the UNCW thing with Keats. It's really interesting.
Yes.
All right. On the way out, like I said, we always give people 30 seconds. Twitter, website, Instagram, Facebook, doesn't matter. Whatever you want to say, anything that our listeners are going to be able to hear and go, that's where I can find him. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, if you'd like to find me, I am on Twitter as at Jim Maisano, J-I-M-M-A-I-S-A-N-O, or at Col Hoops Chat. I couldn't spell it out. They didn't give me that many letters. So it's at C-O-L-L Hoops Chat. That's the Twitter for the radio show. I also have a website, which is collegehoopschat.com. That's an easy one.
Love
it. So those are the best places to find us.
All right, Josh.
Well, Jim, thank you for being on and thank you for the chat. Hopefully sometime again, we can have you back on talking college.
Sure, anytime. Thank you so much. It's nice to chat with you guys. I love the North Carolina angle. So anytime you want to chat, I'm happy to jump on.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right. We just had a great time with Jim. Let's roll right into trivia here. We've touched on a lot of NBA trivia, and unfortunately, this one isn't NBA trivia, but also fortunately, because we just had him on for 45 minutes talking college basketball, because that's where we are. It's that time of year. So, Josh, college basketball, we just had a lovely fellow from New York on, and it made me think, like, I thought through the last week when I was planning this, and I said, I'm really excited about, like, the St. John's thing. And, like, you know, we talked about Iona a little bit. And, no, it's not going to be Iona-themed trivia. Lucky for you. But I miss the old Big East. I miss, like, the Kimball Walker hitting that shot over that tall dude from Pittsburgh. Like, I miss that old Madison Square Garden, you know, nitty-gritty Big East basketball. I really do. I think it's a conference that doesn't get enough love now because of its history. Or because of its lack of history now. So we're going to talk about the Big East tournament and the Big East in general and Big East scoring, because St. John's, my tie to it, is in the Big East. So we are going to go through, for those that might not know, Josh, I made a huge just left hand southpaw right to the chin of Josh's lead, I guess you could say. It is now 12-10. So to be fair, I guess since we make rules in this show, that he has a 6-point opportunity this week. I feel very confident he will do. Which I guess my expectations should be changed slightly because he's done better every time I said he won't. So we're going to go over the top 18 all-time total points in the history of the Big East. So players, you know, all-time who played in the Big East, we're going to go over the top scorers. The caveat I had, I told Josh before we recorded, is I did not notice this until 5 minutes ago via College Basketball Reference. This is since 1985-86, so that actually makes your life a little bit easier. So that was the asterisk I was referring to. So 85-86 was the first year that these points were recorded on College Basketball Reference. Top 18 scores. Josh last week introduced the very lovely hint rule, we're going to call it. So he gets 24 guesses for 18 total answers. He'll get 6 hints that can be traded in or 6 extra guesses, however he wants to do it. Any thoughts before you could begin, my friend?
I already hate this.
Hey, St. John's plays in the Big East, right? It was a hard week. It was either that or Iona, like, you know, player of the year candidates in Iona history. Like, it would have been horrible.
So what?
I would have found something to do with Iona. I was going to say head coaches all time in Iona, but Rick Pitino. And Jim Valvano are the only two that you would have gotten, I promise. So I'm trying to at least give you a fighting puncher's chance, we're going to call it. I don't know how much
it is,
but we'll see. Hey, St. John's, Big East. Don't you agree, though, the Big East basketball, like, it used to be awesome. We used to watch it just as much as the ACC growing up sometimes. Like, it was historic. I mean, the Kemba shot's the famous thing, but, like, you know, this is a lot of history in the Northeast. You know, you have Georgetown, you have Gonzaga. Gonzaga. I looked at the screen, it's all Gonzaga. Georgetown, you have, Villanova, UConn, Seton Hall, a lot of those teams. So, all right, 1985-86 was the first year. Now, 1 through 18, whenever you are ready, let's begin.
Well.
Oh, gosh.
I guess I'm just going to throw Chris Mullin out as a possible answer because Jim talked about him a lot.
It's a great guess. Unfortunately, Chris Mullin is not correct. That did surprise me as well.
I'm just going to kind of give me a minute. I've got to write down what I can remember as players who actually played in the Big East when they played there. Can I get a clarification? This is not asking for him. This is a question clarification. Is this total points in history or average points per game?
I tried to be as clear as possible. It's total points.
Total points. Okay.
Total points.
That's because I can't then name guys like Carmelo Anthony, who I would, if it was average points per game, I would have said Carmelo Anthony. However, he played one year as a freshman at Syracuse when they were in the Big East.
One game. No. It felt like
not Kyrie in his 8 games.
It was actually 11, I think. I'm just kidding. No. Yeah, I do that sometimes depending on the question. Obviously, for listeners that might be new here, trivia is our most popular and fun segment. People love it. But there are some cuts that you'll hear. You'll hear some silence, and then you'll hear like a 5-second cut where it sounds like Josh had 5 seconds to think of answers, but he gets like 60 seconds at least to just, you know, get on a notes app, write them down, whatever you want, and just get them out of your head. Because obviously, that's one of the best ways to get through trivia. This is not some timed, you know, just high stress trivia. It's a high stress for who wins a trophy at the end of the year. So whenever Josh is ready, he can roll off as many answers as he absolutely would like. I am looking forward to this. I have only prepared one hint, technically, for what it's worth to Josh. He prepared one last week. It's not a great hint, I'll be honest. I'll just be upfront with you. It's not a great hint, but I do feel like it would at least help you get a gauge of where you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this, too. If you ask hints, I will have to. There will be a moment where I have to look it up because it tells me the last school that these people played for. That doesn't necessarily mean that's where they, you know, where they played a lot of their games because they, you know, may have transferred. Obviously, even with the old transfer rules, where guys actually had to wait the full year, etc. Guys still transferred though, so just keep that in mind. I will have to make sure I'll clarify anything. You know, if you have any, you know, hints you want to trade in. I will have to make sure that my verbiage is correct or my answers are correct.
Just getting prominent Big East basketball players down in my head.
That's fair. When you have 24 questions or 24 guesses, that's a great way to do it. I mean, you'd rather have more than less. That's my struggle.
Got it at some point. Oh, gosh. So there's one that really bothers me. Because I don't know when they joined the Big East. I don't want to win this team joined. I know a player from this team is top 10 scorers in the history of college basketball, but I don't know when they joined the Big East.
That could be a hint. That would
basically. But like, I will also find out the answer just by guessing the player's name, so there's no reason to waste the hint.
All right, that's fair. That's strategic. We're starting to.
I'm just going
to
put them on the list. We'll guess them eventually here. You said this is from 85, 86.
That is correct.
Well, I'm not going to use Patrick Ewing then.
See, that's the thing. I did not realize this. They basically are honest in Sports Reference or College Basketball Reference where leaders are based on stats from 85-86 through the 21-22 seasons. Not all leaderboards are available for seasons prior to 92, but the statistical coverage for seasons prior is mostly complete. They say there are some imperfections in their statistical basically tracking, but they are basically 99% accurate on 85 through 92. So it basically makes up for guys like Ewing maybe, or, you know, ones they might've missed. So they're very clear that they are as accurate as, I mean, it's Basketball Reference. We trust Basketball Reference more than we trust Google sometimes because it's the pinnacle of statistics in basketball.
It's interesting. Cause like the new Big East is mostly what the old Big East was. Now UConn has left the AAC. All right, we're going to start throwing some guesses out there. I don't have a ton, but see how it goes. I've used one so far that I got wrong. Chris Dunn, the Providence Friar.
Chris Dunn is a great guess. He looked unbelievable in college and unfortunately didn't translate to the NBA, as well as he was unfortunately not on this list. Providence Friar, though. At least you remember Providence was in the Big East, like some people might not until this year, because they look good this year. So.
It's not going to go my way. Ryan Archie Diakonin.
Also another great guess. A guy who did translate decently well to the NBA. I don't know how else to just be like.
You're saying Archie Diakonin translated better to the NBA than Chris Dunn?
Neither of them did, to be clear. But I can at least remember the last time Archie Diakonin played. So let's go with unfortunately not correct.
Emeka Okafor.
Also a really good guess. Also, unfortunately, not correct.
In 4 years at UConn. And won a national title.
I am really glad that this is a, you know, shrunken down to 85 and before, because otherwise I feel like this would be torturous.
Shabazz Napier.
Unfortunately, Shabazz Napier is not correct.
Dwayne Wade.
Oh, the Marquette man. Unfortunately, Dwayne Wade is not correct. You have made six guesses for what it's worth.
I know, I'm counting. Jimmy Butler.
Okay. Jimmy Butler, unfortunately, I believe was a JUCO transfer, so wasn't at Marquette his entire career. Jimmy Butler is not correct.
Dougie McBuckets.
That one shocked me because I would have 100% guessed that, and no, he was not on this list.
Okay, so Creighton hadn't joined the Big East yet.
That's all right. That was worth a guess.
Where were they, the Mountain Valley at the time?
Not a clue. Probably, because I think that's where they were before, only up until this point. They deserve to be in the Big East, though. They've been a lot of fun. They've had guys like him who stuck around. Obviously, his dad was the coach, I think. But they've had guys like him who stuck around and just...
Missouri Valley. Missouri Valley, they joined in 2013.
Wow, yeah. Is that recent?
They left the Missouri Valley in 2013. So they joined the Big East right after McDermott graduated.
Interesting. Nah, yeah, that sucks.
All right, so I got none right my first eight guesses.
It's taken me,
so
it's taken me weeks to get you a question that I feel like is actually stumpable, but like there's a couple on here. I mean, there's definitely some that you should get, I feel like. Maybe. We'll find out.
So okay, so you were really trying to just maintain the lead this time, I see.
I tried to maintain the lead every time, and then you named celebrity all-star MVPs more than I ever thought you would. So here we are. I try to stump you every week.
I'm never going to give you as easy a question as I did last week.
No, that was – well, it wasn't like – I had to guess. Yeah, I had to guess Big Blood or Blue Blood college basketball programs. Yeah, you're right. All right.
I would like my first guess at this point.
Your first hint.
Yeah, hint.
All right. Your first hint, and I've prepared this because it's the one I've actually prepared. There are, actually, I'm between two. You know what? I'm going to give you this one because it's the one I thought of, and I think it may get your thinking back into the right direction. There is one player on this list that is known, if you hear his name, is known for the NBA. The rest of these guys are what I would consider college basketball, like, guys who played there, obviously, a long time. There's only one NBA player. I believe he was number one overall pick. I can double-check that. But there's one NBA player. When I looked at this list, I recognized one NBA name.
That's a trash hint, but okay.
I mean, look, I cannot count that one because that was one I thought of. I have a better one. There are, in the top 18, this basketball reference page, I'll give you two because I think that one was a pretty bad hint. On here, I told you it says last school. I guess last school they played for is what they're referring to. And there are three schools tied for three on this list.
So you're saying there's three schools tied with having three players in this top
on this 18. List. Top okay. 18, correct. Mm-hmm. So both those hints combined should at least get you somewhere, maybe. And then at that point, you can be strategic and ask for your whatever hint you want at that point.
I think one of my issues is I blanked on number one picks from the Big East that aren't Ewing. Oh, except for Allen Iverson.
Great guess. 3 years at Georgetown, unfortunately, was not able to get into the top 18.
Check if he's a number one pick, because
I know for a fact he is a number one pick because he's my second favorite player of all time. He was 96. I can tell you the year.
I said check greatest. If the person that you gave me the guess on was number one pick.
This guy was first round, first pick in the 1990 draft.
Oh, wow.
I even give you that.
Further back than Iverson.
Any guesses, my friend?
No.
You're still thinking. Got it.
Yeah. Still struggling.
I'll leave you with this, or I'll tell you this. This question is not on par with G League players that were drafted, but I tell you,
I should have known enough of those to get a point.
You could have, would have, should have. My point being is this one's not far below it in terms of difficulty. I'm starting to be glad for this pick because, you know, I've tried to make it hard for like six straight weeks to get this lead back and I couldn't. I kept getting beat up and I was like, here we go. He's going to be up by 17 going into the final. Or you're just going to keep getting 2 points every week and I'm going to keep getting one or zero. And I was like, it's just going to be this stupid 6 point. Yeah, no, this one, I mean, look, the Big East, it's a respectable conference. Not a ton of guys since 85 that have wowed us in the NBA, I will say. Which, yeah. You'll remember some of these, though. Seriously, there's some of these recently that I'm like, oh, wow. In terms of just, I mean, guys we would have watched on TV, guys we would have watched in the tournament. So,
yeah, that's what's tough. I'm like, blank on a lot of them that.
I would say this. I would, if I was you, obviously, and you take your strategy as you must. I'm the opposing player here, so me telling you strategy is not probably appropriate, but I would utilize a few hints, like with where you ask me, because if you're stuck and you're between something, it may be worth you getting a point.
I don't even know what to ask. It's a problem. I really don't.
Yeah, this is, look, I've had weeks like this where I just get stumped, like I couldn't get anything, and it happens.
Can you give me the teams that have been members of the Big East from 1985 to now?
Sure, I guess. I'll just tell you what the ones on this list. How about that?
Okay.
That'll give you a real good narrow down. It'll get rid of schools that you wouldn't have to think about. I'll go backwards. I'll go 18-1. I won't even try to give you random order. Syracuse, Providence, UConn, Seton Hall, St. John's, Notre Dame, Villanova, Seton Hall, did I say Xavier? Xavier, Boston College, and Marquette.
Interesting. Interesting. Still at square one. I don't. I feel like a lot of these are not recent players. They are before I was born Big East superstars that stayed there for 4 years. And that is like killing me.
I'm going to give you.
Because you said the only person who was known for playing in the NBA was drafted in 1990.
Correct. However,
far before we were born.
Since 2000, there have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of the 18. So there are a handful from 2000 on. It narrows down basically 20 years for you, and not 40. Can I give you – look, I'm just giving you free hints at this point because I feel bad, because you have to get three to get 1 point. So, I mean, we're still at that level. I recognized up front when I saw this list without looking anyone up, I'll tell you right now how many I immediately, without having to, because you'll look them up, you'll click, and I don't just like haphazardly look up these trivia questions. Like, I'll at least look at some guys on the list, see if something I would have remembered from an NCAA tournament run, things like that. Haphazardly just staring at this list, I recognized 5 or 6. Would it be guys right now in trivia that you would have to think of? No, that's why college basketball trivia is, on this show, is harder than NBA trivia. I mean, it is what it is. College basketball is, it's a beautiful, beautiful game. Is there any hint you're thinking about? Because look at it this way. You have to get 3 points. Is there any, or three people, is there any hint that you've been like thinking about where you're like, I just have to ask them that?
No.
All right, I'll tell you this.
Think of prominent players in the 90s and the 2000s.
I'll give you this. Since you have to get three of them, I'm going to give you the hints for fun because it's going to help me have more fun. The guy that's number one on this list has 2,761 points. And he played at Marquette from 2017 to 2020. It's not like I'm giving you 18.
Marquette's been garbage for the past few years.
Good stats, bad team.
Yeah, I don't. Clearly, I don't remember anybody that played Marquette the last few years.
If you get to a point where you want to tap, I'm totally fine with that. But at least exhaust some guesses, because at the end of the day, like, it one will make it more funny.
Yeah, I understand. Would you do this for entertainment?
And two, well, at least, you know, it'll make it more fun when I reveal some of these names.
Yeah.
When we reveal these names, we're gonna play a game of Have you heard of them before? that's what we're not.
It's gonna be like a little bit easier once, like, I hear the name pop up. I'm gonna be like, oh, but it's tough now.
A couple, yeah.
Some of them will be like, oh, but it's tough now because.
For what it's worth, in the 26 to 50 something range, there are many more NBA players. So it kind of gets to that point where they weren't there just long enough where it was like, okay, these guys could have, you know, scored a little bit more. The next NBA player after the guy at 16 was 28. And when I mean NBA, I mean guys that I absolutely recognize.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help you. I'm just telling you where we are in terms of these guys stuck around in the Big East as long as humanly possible, and they scored as much as humanly possible. So
I'm not coming up with anything. Like, I have nothing.
That's fine. I'm okay with it. If you're ready to tap, then I mean we can do this, you know. Is this your official white flag, you know, WWE double tap on the floor of the ring? Like, what is this?
No, I've got theoretically 14 guesses left, so let's go for another hint.
That's fine. You're asking.
And I don't have a question.
Okay.
Let's see what information might pop up.
Let's do this.
This will leave you with 13 guesses.
The guy who was drafted number one overall, I'll give you two hints because at this point, like, you're dead in the water. So the guy who was 16th, who was the number one overall pick in 1990, was drafted by the New Jersey Nets.
In 1990.
Mm-hmm. He played for Syracuse. My second hint for you while you think of that is the guy, the hints are starting to get way easy because I'm about to just give it to you basically, since you need three. The guy who is first on this list played from 2017 to 2020, like I said, at Marquette. Or his last name is Howard. All right, folks, this has been a fun trivia. All right, at number
18. He's such a joker because it didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I promise you.
You got me. I'm going to wave the white flag. You got me. I don't know at all. And
we've both had our moment now. All right, that's fine. I'm going to give you a couple of guys outside of the top 18 that are recognizable.
No, just give me all of them.
Are you sure? Okay. Because just outside, there's a couple good games on the
outside. Just outside the top 18.
Yeah, just outside the top 18. There's Richard Hamilton is the next NBA guy at 28, followed by Alonzo Mourning at 32. Alonzo Mourning was there. Randy Boyd.
Where did he play again?
Zoe was at Georgetown. They had a string of like really good NBA guys. I mean, we're talking
Ewing. Yeah, that's right.
Zoe, AI. I'm forgetting somebody in the early
2000s. Actually, now I'm thinking about it, I'm surprised that I didn't guess Alonzo Mourning is the 1990 first pick. So. Well, it's because he wasn't first pick, because Shaq was.
That's right. Yeah. Good pull there, NBA fan. Josh Hart, believe it or not, was only one spot behind Ray Allen at 40 and 41. Randy Foy, shout out to Randy Foy on those Nuggets teams, at 36. And after that, there's a pretty big gap again.
Foy really was also a UConn Husky, right?
Yes, he was. No, Randy Foy was Villanova.
Villanova, okay. But he would have also been better as a college guy than an NBA guy. He would more be known as that.
Matt Carroll, Ben Gordon, Kemba Walker at 62. I was finding him. That was part of the reason.
Matt Carroll.
Back. Matt Carroll. Yeah. Can't pull that one out of my hiney. After that, it's a big gap for the next NBA guy.
I've seen Matt Carroll. I saw Matt Carroll play two games as a Charlotte Bobcat in person.
That's right. I forgot.
More Cable Arena.
All right. I won't delay this any longer. So we are going to go through the top 18. At 18, we are looking at John Wallace. He was a Syracuse Orange from 93 to 96. He scored 2,100 points. Above
like
him
Big
was
Ben Wallace?
No, John Wallace. John Wallace. He was a forward for Syracuse. Let's go with at 17, Ryan Gomes. Ryan Gomes was a Providence.
Rings a bell?
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Ryan Gomes was a Providence. What did you call them again?
Friar.
I forgot. Friars, that's right. He was a Friar from 2002 to 2005, scoring 2,100 as well. 16 was the guy that we were trying to just give you. I think of Syracuse. I think of this guy. I think of the Big East. I think of this guy.
You don't think of Melo when you think of Syracuse?
Oh, I do. I don't have to think of one guy. Derek Coleman. Derek Coleman was a famous New Jersey Net, drafted in 1990. Had an okay NBA career, but he was a number one overall pick. At the end of the day, I at least know the names of most number one overall picks, I feel like. So,
got nothing for you.
All right.
It's to me.
Number 15, UConn Husky from 89 to 92 was Chris Smith. Drafted by
just
the Timberwolves.
Guessed, like generic names.
You could have. Yeah. Next was Jeremy Hazel from 08 to 11 at Seton Hall. At 13, a guy I recognize was D'Angelo Harrison, 2012-2015 at St. John's. He had a big shot in the Big East tournament. I believe it was semifinal his junior or senior year. I remember that. Whatever year that Kimbo just – the year before Kimbo went crazy.
Party at Kimbo!
Yeah, it's like the only thing you think of with Big East basketball, unfortunately. You being everyone. Chris Thomas. So Chris Smith, not to be confused with Chris Thomas. Chris Thomas was a Notre Dame Fighting Irish from 2002 to 2005. Now we're into the 2,200-point range at 11 with Scotty Reynolds. Reynolds was a Villanova Wildcat from 2007 to 2010. Number 10, I recognize personally. Kerry Kittles, another New Jersey Net. It's a name that most people maybe recognize if you tie it to Villanova. He was there from 93 to 96. He scored 2,200. I'm not shocked you have nothing to say. Number 9, Miles Powell. Miles Powell was a Seton Hall. What? Man. Pirate. Thank you. I'm just struggling with my mascots today. Seton Hall was 2017 to 2020.
On my side. Can you name these mascots?
Yeah, I'll just start naming Wildcat and Bobcat and yeah.
Wildcats. Bulldogs.
Bulldogs, that's a good one. Let's see. Seton Hall, 2017 to 2020 was Miles Powell. So if that name remotely rings a bell, it's because he
left
2 years ago. All right. Trayvon Blewett.
That one rings a bell.
Yeah, 2015 to 2018, the Xavier. What team?
Xavier.
Okay. Again, what is Xavier's mascot? I can't remember.
A musketeer.
Musketeers, that's right. I got it off the top of my head. Lawrence After Moton. I said it. No. Lawrence Moton, 92-95, Syracuse Orange. Dana Barros was an 86-89 Boston College. Malik.
Why did I spend so time trying to guess these?
It's okay. Malik Sealy. was the other St. John, which we realized the St. John was the Storm, Red Storm.
Red Storm.
Yep, the St. John Red Storm player from 89 to 92. Excuse me.
Apologize to St. John fans for calling them the Johnnies.
It's okay.
I don't think that'd be a good other nickname.
Just it would be. There. It would actually be really cool.
Yeah.
Number four, you have Luke Herangotti. Herangotti. He played at Notre Dame from 2007 to 2010. Rounding out the top three, you have Terry DeHeer, played at Seton Hall from 90 to 93. Troy Bell was a Boston College man from, I thought you maybe would know Troy Bell, maybe, 2000 to 2003, Boston College. And at number one, who graduated or left Marquette in 2020, was Marcus Howard. Marcus Howard hit that big shot when Marquette made, I think it was the Sweet 16 a couple years ago, maybe. I just remember him. I remember him in a tournament of some kind. Yeah, they won. Oh, gosh, I'm having to pull now on basketball reference how they won or how they did. Let's see. It doesn't show the record, of course. It doesn't. I have to click through the year. So, either way, Marcus Howard, guard for Marquette.
Hello, this has been the Two Pointers Podcast. I'm Josh. Just kidding.
12 to 10. I'll politely end with this. Good effort. Yeah, a lot of great guesses. I really wasn't disappointed by the likes of Jimmy Butler, Doug McDermott, Allen Iverson, Chris Mullin, Chris Dunn, not to be confused there, Ryan Archie Diacono, I think is how you say it, Emeka Okafor, Dwayne Wade, and Shabazz Napier. All guys, by the way, common theme that played in the NBA. I don't believe any of these guys I named. If they did play, wasn't a long time. So shout out to the old Big East basketball. I am curious to know how well Jim would have done. Jim, if you're listening, please let us know on Twitter. I'll end with this, Josh. I am looking forward to my 5-minute monologue of the Aisha and Steph Curry show. Board games with Steph and Aisha. I don't really know what it's called, actually. I'll be watching that this week. And then I don't know how. This just has to be thrown at the end. How did we not bring up the new NBA Wordle game, Poetle? Yakka Poetle, whatever. Poetle, Poetle, whatever.
No, stop, please.
I know.
How do you pronounce his name? Say his
Jakob
name.
Yakka Poetle.
There you go.
Yeah, it's Poetle. My bad. Poetle the Turtle. We're trying to tweet our scores every day if we can. Y'all play along, tweet at us.
I lost today.
I did not. I got Trevor Ariza on the fifth one. Spoiler.
Yeah, I didn't remember you played the Lakers. I was like, oh, I've got to find out what old guy still plays there.
Well, I could have actually, and it's funny because I thought of him on guest two and I didn't do it. And I just was like, and maybe it's Carmelo. And I threw Carmelo out there.
I did guess Carmelo.
That's what got me. That's what got me the Trevor
Ariza. Tried Anthony day to day Davis.
I did too. I got four, I think, is what I got today. But anyway, great game. If you haven't played it, we'll link it in the bottom of the episode. But at 2 Pointers on Twitter.
Just to get to the Pacific Division and get the Lakers.
I try to be. The division's a really great way to play it. It's really strategic. If you can like really see the division and like be like, okay, it's not Southeast, and then if you can just eliminate the other one, because there's three in each, obviously, you can really be strategic with the Pacific.
Yeah.
I also think jersey numbers is really important if you're between two teams. Like if you think it's one of two teams,
I don't know jersey numbers very well.
It's not easy, but I think that's helpful.
Like you could ask me jersey numbers of Charlotte Hornets and I would not be able to tell you. LaMelo is two, that's the only one I know for sure.
Yeah. Bridges is zero. I could tell you.
Okay. I think Rozier's three, maybe. Could be
yes.
Wrong.
He is three. Okay. I'm better with jersey numbers than most, too. I got to give myself credit.
Couldn't tell you what Hayward is.
Plumlee or
I think.
Any of the rest of them?
Yeah, that's tough. But yeah, play Poeltl or Poeltl. Gosh, I always say Poeltl. I think about it. Poeltl.
It's because it rhymes with Wordle. That's the point.
Yeah, yeah. Wordle, Poeltl. Got it. It's great. I love it.
Poeltl.dunktown.com, I think it was.
Yeah, and we'll put it in the bottom of the episode just to make sure people can go straight to it. Save it to your bookmarks and just every day play it. If you're an NBA fan, you should be. At Two Pointers on Twitter, really quick. Instagram, TikTok, both the same. At Two Pointers Podcast. Facebook.com/The Two Pointers Podcast. And then lastly, website promo. There will be something really awesome, new, fun, exciting coming up that pertains to an event in the next 3 months in the basketball world. It will be posted on our website in the next 7 days. So please, 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 again, bookmark our website. Take a look at it. We will also be announcing it very shortly. Thank you, Josh. I'm done. Get out of here.
Well, that being said, this has been this week's edition of the Two Pointers Podcast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Trevor.
And we will see you soon.